Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you? As I am a friend to the friendless, or a friend to the friendly, or a friend to the unfriendly. I'll be your friend. So sit back now and let me tell you a story. Let me read to you. Perhaps you need to go to sleep, in which case it'll be perfect. Perhaps you need to stay awake, in which case it'll be perfect. Whatever it is, I know it's meant to be. YI Audio Audiobooks presents a reading of the novel It's Hard to Be a Partridge by Hardy White, as read by Hardy White. Chapter 1. Keith Partridge reclined upon his divan, thinking about Arkifarb and what life was like before he came to Earth. There wasn't much he missed. Who would miss anything living this kind of lifestyle of a superstar, a sort of demigod, a sex idol? But back on Arkifarb, there were foods he missed. Things didn't taste right here, and hygiene practices just weren't the same. This really was a more primitive culture. Keith closed his eyes and inhaled the fragrance of his wonderful room, filled with fresh flowers because he had unlimited resources. He thought about the camera on his belt buckle that recorded everything for school officials back home, and for himself, so he could put together his presentation and report. It was a terrible cliché for students to travel to more primitive planets and embed themselves and do their reports on that. It was called pseudo-time travel, and it really was the most low-effort research project you could do. And everyone knew that mostly people did it so they could see what it was like to be a god. Everyone wanted to go to a primitive island, flick their lighter, and be given all sorts of fruits and people and privileges. And that's certainly what Keith Partridge had here, privileges. He didn't really like traveling with the others. They were underclassmen, some even elementary school students. Danny was okay some of the time, and Lori, even though she was the same age, was sort of a pain in his ass. Now, the other two children, they had nothing in common with Keith. In fact, he never saw them. And they were mainly supervised by Reuben Kincaid, who was a part-time substitute teacher and the only one willing to come along to this particular planet, Earth. Earth should have been more popular with research projects, especially for people on Arkifarb, who have so many similarities. It didn't even seem all that primitive. Some things hadn't changed. I mean, look at the width of the tie. This is the same width tie that they wear on Arkifarb. And yet here on Earth, it seems like they're just going through a phase. Yeah, maybe it happened years before ours. But maybe history works in cycles. Keith took a long drag of his Earth cigarette. I hope I don't perish the way that my fictitious father does on this planet. That would be tragic. Also, I hope I don't become addicted to alcohol. Why are you being so lazy? Said Danny. Oh, my peace is shattered, said Keith. We've got to be at the recording studio. Pronto. All right, I'll get up. Keith lazily sat up on his divan and ran his fingers through his thick hair. Let's go, pretty boy, said Danny. The bus is waiting. Keith stepped outside of the house, and there waiting was their fantastically painted bus. That had been all Keith's idea, too. He wanted to make a big splash artistically. He thought, if I can go to this primitive planet, not only be an observer, but maybe make some sort of subtle contribution. That's not really interfering in their culture, which was against the rules. But if somehow he could introduce a subtle design element like squares that had colors in them, well, maybe he could change this place for the better. Maybe their hygiene would improve. Maybe bidets would be more readily available. I mean, they have them, but not like we do on Arkafarb, he thought. Keith boarded the bus and took a seat near the back and started to try to recapture his nap. "Well, are you ready to sing?" said Danny. "Yeah, are you?" Danny and Keith laughed. They knew that none of them had musical abilities, and so doing this cover as a band that played popular music, it was a real stretch. And if it wasn't for Reuben Kincaid and his resources and his uncanny ability to navigate all sorts of earth bureaucracy, he was able to establish some fake credentials as well as ringers. Yes, Reuben arranged for professional musicians on Earth to play and sing instead of the Arkafarb students. But Keith had done a little singing himself on Arkafarb, and even though he wasn't very good, he was about 1,000 times better than your average Earthling. When they arrived at the studio, he saw a few people that he recognized that had come to live on Earth from Arkafarb so that they could exploit that difference, like a Superman factor. He knew that there was one who was calling himself Glenn Campbell, who on their home planet was not very remarkable, but here, a genius. But they never quite figured out, and they were never tipped off by the fact that he couldn't read human music. How's he doing it? They thought maybe he was a god. Danny took a long drag of his cigarette before Reuben snatched it away. "Children, don't smoke here. You're giving me a stroke," he said. "Cool your jet," said Danny. "Don't worry. Some kids smoke here. I've done my research." "Your research is dated," said Keith. "I've seen the books you're reading. Bowery Boys?" "Yeah, what of it?" said Danny. "Listen, it's time to get to work." One microphone was pulled up for Keith because he insisted on singing. "I can do this, Reuben." "All right." But the rest of the microphones were for the Ron Hicklin Singers. That's the group that Reuben had hired to sing instead of the kids. They came in and two of them were adult men. "Reuben," said Keith. "Hey, how's this gonna work? Those are adult men." He was worried. "Don't worry about it," whispered Reuben. "We're gonna speed up the tape so that they sound like kids." "Oh, that's a good idea," said Keith. "I remember a fella doing that and then saying that they were rodents or something." "Yeah, it's an easy trick." Keith pulled up to the microphone. "Is there any way I could get some sort of cover for this? Because it smells like human. I mean, bad breath." An engineer popped out of the studio and put a windscreen on the microphone for Keith. "Thank you. Sorry, I don't mean to be difficult." "Oh, you're always difficult," said Danny. The next day, Keith decided that he was going to take a walk. He didn't often do that because he was a celebrity and he would be swarmed by fans. But today he had an idea. "I'm going to put on a disguise," he said. And he grabbed a cowboy hat and a vest and long chaps. And the chaps had big round silver discs on them and fringe. On top of that, he put on gloves that went up almost all the way to his elbow. They looked like gauntlets. Then he strapped on two six-shooters, put some spurs on his boots, and headed out the door. "No one will recognize me like this," he thought. And in an instant, it looked like explosions going off. He saw flashes of light. I'm under fire, he thought. If this was Arkafarb, we'd be attacked by the Globons. The Globons are jealous of us. They're firing their phaser pistols. But it wasn't phaser pistols. It was flashes from cameras. They were photographers and fans. Keith, Keith, they yelled. What are you doing? You look like a cowboy. Keith froze in his tracks. Yeah, hello, fans. A few of them fainted. Ones with pads and paper ran up to him. They had signs on their fedoras that said press. Keith, they said, tell us what you're doing. Is this a new look? Are you going to try country music? Keith thought for a moment. Country music? Like different countries? Yeah, country music. Keith went back to school in his head and thought, what do I know about Earth geography? What are some different countries? Now I know that I'm in the United States of Mamaria? Keith became confused. Let me think. I know there's other ones because they sound like things on Arkafarb. So there's Arkansas. That's a country. And Chinese? Keith blurted out. Chinese. What? Chinese. Music. You're going to play Chinese music, the press said, and Hurley wrote it down. Yes, that's our next album. Reuben burst out of the door. Wait, wait, he's kidding, he's kidding. He was panicking. This is clearly an ad campaign for a new movie that Keith is in called The Chinese Cowboy. He was improvising. This guy's really good at this, thought Keith. No wonder he's a teacher. But why is he a part-time teacher and a part-time substitute teacher? He must have a graduate degree. That'll really set you back in the academic industry, especially in K through 12. Keith confirmed. Yeah, I was just kidding, everyone. Now I've got to go back inside and answer my fan mail. They cheered, and more fans fainted. What were you doing out there, said Reuben to Keith when they were safely inside. Why did you go out dressed like that? I thought I was in disguise, Keith said. I didn't think they'd recognize me. You have not been on Earth as long as I have. At least you don't have the experience I have. And they are waiting out there, and they know you're going to be in disguise. In fact, if you were to dress up like Keith Partridge, you might be less noticeable. They both laughed. Keith thought about that. What's it like to be me? I can't wait to see the footage. I know because the camera's in my belt buckle that a lot of it is just going to be the foreheads of young people. But I also know that it probably has recorded some great insights, maybe things I didn't even notice. When I'm busy, like working in the studio, maybe the camera's picking up something interesting that's happened in the corner, like one of the Wrecking Crew working out a part. Or the Ron Hicklin singers drinking alcohol or whatever they have to do to get their voices just right. Keith was proud of himself. You know, I have a reputation as a bit of a mess up, but, you know, at heart I'm a scholar. What? Did I say that out loud? Yes, you did, said Reuben. You're no scholar, my friend. Now, Danny... Oh, you're joking with me, said Keith. Danny's no scholar. In fact... You know what he does all day? What? He resells cigarettes to children. Really? Yes, he uses his powers and his resources as a student visitor from Arkafarb to, I don't know how he does it, acquire cigarettes. And then he sells them back at a tremendous profit to all the people his age, so-called. That is abusing his power a bit, Reuben thought. But listen, maybe it's part of his research project. You haven't seen his proposal like I have. Oh, really? I'm sure it's very sophisticated, said Keith, unimpressed. Well, you'd be surprised. It's more sophisticated than yours. Is it really? Does his include mating practice research the way I'm doing it? No. In fact, it does not. But his research is also long-term, and he plans to go on and have combat with other celebrities. Keith thought for a minute. Boy, that's not me. I'm not very sporty like that. I was thinking just maybe taking up a vice. What sort of vice? You already smoke. I don't know. There's just so many weird drugs here on Earth. Yes, but all you need is that Arcafarb drug, Zambazolan. Zambazolan is fine, but Zambazolan, there's just one thing. It's one mood. Here, they have drugs for every mood. I don't think they work that way, said Reuben skeptically. I don't think he can target it that precisely. I think some of them will bite you in the butt. Oh, yeah? Not like our Kavlarvian butt biters back home. They both laughed. Just then, their mother, Shirley Jones, the actress, came in. She was the only one that wasn't from another planet. She was from Earth, and she thought she was working on a television show. Yes, they were all on television. Television existed even on this primitive planet. It wasn't like on Arcafarb. I mean, not television at its highest. On Arcafarb, the ads between the shows had become true works of art. Artists and artisans put all their effort in these tremendous television adverts that sported great budgets that manifest themselves in complex lighting and computer effects. The most in-demand, highest-paid actors would participate. People would lose their lives performing the stunts required for these commercials. But it was elevated to the highest art form. And it was the shows that we had to tolerate, thought Keith, to work our way through. I don't want the Partridge Family show to be like that, just some placeholder between exquisite commercials. I want it to say something. Like, where's the dad? And why do they all bicker? Keith had lofty, lofty ambitions. He couldn't imagine that the little kids were really getting much out of this whole thing, because they seemed to be not taking it as seriously. They were playing with other children their age, and they didn't really seem intellectually superior in any way. I guess maybe they hadn't been in school very long, because the only real difference between the two species was knowledge. And since the young kids didn't have much knowledge, they were almost identical to their primitive counterparts, while Keith, who had been in school quite a while, was already a Superman, a demigod. Someone who was unbelievably intelligent and gifted, more so than 99% of the human beings and other species on this primitive, sad planet, where no one really ever fully got their butts clean. Keith reached for another cigarette. Oh, please, you gotta give those up, said Reuben. I can't. Shirley Jones chimed in. Why are you smoking? That's very bad for our image.
Our image? Said Keith.
Yes, said Shirley, our image. You know, the way the public sees us.
Public sees us? Said Keith.
Yes, our fans. The way they perceive us. They have certain expectations for our behavior.
Certain expectations for our behavior? Said Keith.
The public? Said Keith.
Yes, our fans.
Our fans? Said Keith.
Are you all right? Said Shirley Jones. You seem to just be repeating everything I said. And Keith was all right. But the problem was, its school officials were speaking into his earpiece the whole time.
What are you doing? They said.
Put down that cigarette. You know you're not supposed to ingest any earth drugs.
He tried to concentrate and not respond to it. This must be how newscasters feel. How do you not repeat the voices in your head?
How do you not?
You're doing it right now.
Who is?
You? Who's you?
Keith didn't know where the voice was coming from.
Just to be clear, am I speaking to myself or is this still a school official?
This is still a school official. And let me tell you, you're a...
Keith found the off button.
That's better.
I'm sorry, Shirley Jones, TV mother.
said Keith. I'll put out my cigarette.
He almost used an expression that was no longer popular. Boy, you could really go wrong if you got dated books. Some of the information that was available on Arcopharb about Earth was very old, and you had to check the publication date, because the last thing you wanted to do was have on the wrong clothes when you came here, or use some expression that hadn't been used in ages or wasn't used yet. So you had to really look it up. When did people start saying, okay? All right, well, that looks like maybe it's the 19th century, early 19th century or something, or late 18th century. Either way, we're all right. People say okay, and they still say okay. So Keith would say okay. But there were other things he knew he was going to get wrong. And maybe smoking was one. And probably opium use, which he had also heard about. I want to go to one of these opium dens, he thought. I would like to learn Mandarin first, though, because I don't want to seem like some tourist. Just then, he heard a ringing in his ear.
Hello?
Hello? Is this school officials?
School officials? This is Timmy.
Timmy?
Yeah. Who is this?
I'd rather not say.
Have I reached the telephone?
The voice on the other end was timid and sort of staticky. Keith knew immediately this was not a school official. Had someone hacked into the channel? Who was speaking to him in his ear?
Timmy, where are you calling from? I'm not calling at all. I'm using my special ham radio.
Timmy was clearly making staticky and swishy sounds with his mouth. Okay. Are you all right?
No, bad men are trying to get me.
That's when he realized that there wasn't a sound of a child in his ear. It was Danny, whispering in his ear, playing a trick, because Danny knew that also his headphone had been going off with school officials. So he was playing a joke on Keith. Danny, I'm going to clobber you. Why, I ought to clobber you, said Danny. You better watch it, see? I'm warning you. Danny threateningly wagged his finger. Leave it be. Keith looked at Danny's costume. Danny was wearing a orange long-sleeve mock turtleneck and green striped pants with a wide white belt. And on the belt buckle was Danny's camera, being monitoring everything that he saw and experienced, just like Keith, just like the other kids. Have you seen Lori? Said Keith.
Yeah, she was going on a date with some guy, said Danny.
Really? Who is that?
Well, why do you want to know? It's your sister.
You know that's not my sister, said Keith. And you know that we were dating.
Yeah, that's why I think it's pretty funny she's going out with an earthling. It's like going out with a monkey.
Keith thought for a moment. It was like going out with a monkey. He saw all his fans that way. He thought it would be more exciting than it was, that all this fawning would be elevating to his ego, at least, and his soul, maybe even, at most. But it wasn't. It was deflating. It was like having gibbons interested in you. These were primitive folk. He wanted something more. Something intellectual. Someone with as much interest about the world as he had. Someone as deep and profound as Keith Partridge. The name had been arrived at by some school officials. There were only so many things you could call yourself when you went to another planet and took an identity. It had to come from an official list, and the official list came from a series of books called The Official History of Blank, and then the name of the world was in there. And so the official history of Earth had been the set of books that Keith had read before coming here, and everybody had to do it, or at least had to prove they had, but most people cheated. They either got some kind of shortcut cliff note version
or they literally cheated on the test. But Keith had powered through all 10 volumes, and he knew a great amount of details about the history of Earth, about culture, about expression, but it still wasn't everything. In fact, it wasn't even the smallest percentage of what he needed to know. So he was just sort of doing it on the fly, figuring it out as he went along, looking for clues, mimicking, acting like other people he saw. I will blend in by blending in. And because I look like them, except for my outrageous clothing, I will pass as an Earthling. Shirley Jones began to pick her teeth. She sucked on them, trying to get a piece of whatever she had eaten that morning out of it. "Anybody hungry?" she said. "Yes, we're all hungry," said Keith. "I'm starving," said Danny. "I could eat a horse, and how?" "Well, that settles it," said Shirley Jones. "I'm going to make us all some food." And she went into the kitchen. Keith couldn't remember whether they were on set or in their actual home. If she had headed into the fake kitchen that was on set, she was in for a tremendous disappointment. All of the food there was plastic. None of the appliances worked. It was phony, fake. And why Keith couldn't tell the difference is because it didn't look anything like his kitchen in his house on Arkafarb. It was totally different. First of all, there were no right angles. That just wasn't done. It's not the way you build homes. A right angle is cursed somehow. Everybody knew that ghosts live in right angles. So who would willingly build a house and invite ghosts? That took some getting used to. Another thing is that people in Arkafarb like to take their food and throw it on the ground before they eat it. But here, all the kitchens had these clean floors made out of plastic. There was no way to get dust and dirt and grime on your food properly that way. So Keith would keep a little container of soot and grime and sand, and he would surreptitiously cover his food with it before he ate it. Because on his planet, they all had a special organ that took care of these things. In fact, they needed these things. It took silicone and silicon and other minerals and things out of the things they ate and turned them into beautiful diamonds and crystals. And then every time that you would go to the bathroom on the 10th anniversary of however old you were, say like at 10 years old, 20 years old, 30 years old, you would poop a diamond. And that diamond would go into a fund. And that fund would help pay for your senescence. And so Keith wanted to make sure that he ate enough sand so he could retire comfortably. Shirley, what are you making in there? He was checking to see if it was the real kitchen or not. "I was thinking of making eggs." Keith was startled. "They lay eggs? People don't lay eggs on our planet. Humans lay eggs." "I know what you're thinking," said Mr. Kincaid. "No, she's going to cook eggs laid by another creature." What kind of creature?" "I don't really want to tell you because on our planet, it's not a creature who we would eat or eat the eggs of or anything else. We would only revere them, and they'd be there like family members." "Oh, God," thought Keith. "Do they eat chickens here?" "I'm afraid so," said Mr. Kincaid. "And their eggs." "They eat the eggs of chickens?" "Yes," said Mr. Kincaid. "And much more. Please, please tell me that they don't eat corn." "Yes, they think it's food." "Oh, God," thought Keith. "What strange, surreal hell is this place?
What have I traded to come here? I have given up my sanity and my very soul to live here on a place that eats such things. Danny laughed. Let me tell you about Cincinnati-style chili. Keith said, no, stop. I need to do this. Even though we are a different species, there is something so similar between humans and us. I'm going to get through this. If they can do it, we can do it. All I have to do is suspend my morality and sense of disgust, and then I can fit in, and I can be one of them, and I can learn, and maybe even contribute something. What, with your singing, said Danny? Yes, with my singing. And let me tell you something. The Ron Hicklin singers, two of whom are three are human, the rest are from Arcafar. They wouldn't even have a gig if it wasn't for this. So Ruben not only is helping us, students, he's helping other Arcafarbian scholars, as well as people who want to come here and just improve their lives. Maybe they're adventurous. So the Wrecking Crew, the Ron Hicklin singers, and little old me, the scholar, Keith Partridge. It's all part of a great symbiotic relationship between worlds. We're learning and they're teaching. And even though they're so-called more primitive, they are our professors. And we, their humble students. Then why are you having sex with the professors? Listen, if I don't do the things that I'm expected as a super pop star on Earth, how long before they figure out what's going on? And then other people that have come to this Earth to do research, like Michael Jackson, will be found out, and God knows what will happen. You're right, said Danny. I mean, we have an obligation. We want to help, but we don't want to really interfere, and we certainly don't want to make things worse. No, said Keith, and there is no way that the Partridge family could make Earth worse than it already is. Chapter 2. Shirley Jones began to choke on an egg. She couldn't get any words out and could only make breathy, breathless cries for help. How those eggs coming, said Mr. Kincaid. I hear a strange sound, said the youngest child, and ran into the kitchen. Mommy, 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 what's wrong? Keith ran in. He knew exactly what was going on. She was choking, but he couldn't remember if the Heimlich maneuver had been invented yet. I do not want to inadvertently invent the Heimlich maneuver, but then again, do I let Shirley Jones die? If I do this, if I grab onto her rib cage and I pull up violently and she aspirates vomitus, the bolus that is choking her, it will from then on be known as the Partridge maneuver. Get me a phone. Get me a computer. There's no phone or computer like that, said Kincaid. What do we do? Just give her the Bajabili maneuver. The Bajabili maneuver here is called the Heimlich maneuver, and I don't think it's been invented yet. Give her the Bajabili, said Danny. And so Keith did. Shirley Jones vomited up the egg that had lodged itself in her windpipe. Oh, thank you so much. I tried to swallow a hard-boiled egg. Why did you... Well, I'm just glad that I could help, said Keith. Thank you, said Shirley Jones. Do you have a cigarette? Yes. And Danny pulled out a pack. They're $1.20,
Danny, just give her a smoke, said Reuben Kincaid testily. Well, now you've gone and done it. What do you mean? Look, Danny pointed at the window. Outside the window were photographers with big flashes that looked like silver bowls with a sun in them. A sun and supernova that has now cast a large illumination upon a scene that was not to be seen. And they have witnessed, and they will now record, that it was Keith Partridge who invented the maneuver for the choker. That you lift it up on the rib cage to save the life of someone who could no longer breathe because of gluttony or whatever have you. Being surprised, being told a joke as they're eating a banana. And so the press would record this, and they would spread it, and people would become interested because it's a life-saving technique and everybody would want to know about it. But now it's going to be attributed to a pop star in 1970s Earth when it should have been Herr Heimlich von Schwefendeber, or whatever his name was, Keith thought, who I believe was a field marshal in Prussia. Maybe it already happened. But then the next day, his worst fear was realized. Partridge saves Partridge. Partridge saved Partridge today by helping Partridge puke up a choking piece of thing that was in another Partridge. Partridge accredited with saving Partridge's life because of swift Partridge thought and maneuver. And from now on, this will become known as the Partridge Maneuver. Well, it happened, said Reuben Kincaid. We did it. We violated the one rule that the school had. Don't interfere in their history or culture. And don't pollute or don't go around and leave things there, especially things that are from an advanced technology, something that you might think is ordinary, like our personal communication devices or something like that, or our universal translator earpieces, or our hat that makes us look like any type of animal. Don't leave that there, or you're going to be in trouble. Two, wait, Keith said, if it's just one rule, it's got multiple parts. And we just broke so many, said Reuben as he tore at the skin on his throat. We're going to be all right, said Danny. We're going to be all right. We're going to undo this. How? Said Keith. It's too late. It's already in the papers. And if something's in the papers, well, that means it's there forever. No. Wait. I've got to think. Danny thought for a while. No, I got nothing. I have something, said Reuben. We'll do this. We'll discredit you. I will track down Professor Heimlich, and I will get him to attest that he has already thought of this. He just hasn't told anybody yet. Do you think it'll work? Said Danny. I don't know. But, you know, Heimlich might be one of us. There are people from other schools here. Really? Yeah. This isn't something we coordinate globally, or we don't even coordinate it between school associations, said Reuben. You got to be kidding me. So there are people from other schools, from our planet, said Danny, who are here doing stuff, and they're not monitoring other students, so they don't know who they are. Yes, said Reuben. Is it possible, said Keith, that there are no actual humans on Earth? I never really thought about that, said Reuben. Let me see if I follow you, said Danny. Are you saying that maybe everybody here is a student or a tourist from Arkafarb, and they just think that we're all humans? And that is why there doesn't seem to be any substantial difference between us and these primitive creatures? Well, you said it more articulately than I would have, said Keith, but yes, I think that might be the case. I've heard of this happening, said Reuben Kincaid, with undercover police. Will they infiltrate an organization only to find out that the entire organization is made up of undercover police from different agencies? They just don't know it.
Exactly.
So I'm saying, said Keith, that these could all be students from other Arkafarb schools.
What about Shirley? Said Danny.
That's a good question. And your Earth father?
That's also a good question, said Keith.
I don't know. I guess I don't know who any of these people really are. Maybe we ought to check them for cameras.
No, said Keith. You know, not every school is going to have the same protocol. Maybe they don't all have belt buckle cameras. Maybe they've got eye implants.
Eye implants, said Reuben. We can do that.
I think we can. But, you know, something else occurred to me.
What's that? Said Danny.
Keith stroked his chin for a minute.
How do we know that back on Arkafarb?
Oh, no, said Reuben.
How do we know that back on Arkafarb that there aren't visiting students from a more advanced culture embedded among us?
Danny laughed.
I gotta confess, I am from the most advanced culture there ever was, see? I'm from a planet that is so sophisticated that we can fly through the air using the power of our minds, see?
Oh, I'm pretty positive that you, Danny, are not one of them.
Reuben thought for a minute.
That might really explain a lot on our home planet. Like, how did we discover these other planets?
I know, said Keith. I couldn't come up with interstellar flight. That isn't something I could work out in my whole lifetime.
Me neither, said Danny. I can get on a spaceship, and I can go to the other side of the universe and visit, like, some rinky-dink planet like this one. But I don't know how it's done. I'm just a passenger.
Yeah, same, said Reuben. I wonder how we got here.
Sometimes, said Keith. I wonder if I'm not dreaming it.
What do you mean?
Well, every time I lie on this divan, I have, like, hallucinations.
Hallucinations?
I'm not sure, but I think maybe when I'm falling asleep, or when I am asleep, that the school officials are saying things in my ear, and I'm mistaking them for thoughts.
That could be, said Danny. I've had mine go off in the middle of the night. Usually do it on accident. They'll lean on a button when they're on the night shift, and they'll start talking about how the donuts don't taste the same anymore.
Yeah, this wasn't like that, though, said Keith. This was more purposeful and more poetic. I would start to have visions of places I'd never been.
On Earth?
On Earth. Islands or jungles. And I'm not sure what that's all about.
Listen, said Reuben, we've got one problem and one problem exactly. We have to get this Heimlich on the papers and you out of the papers.
When he did that, he moved his finger back and forth, like in the papers was over there to the right and out of the papers was over there on the left, and they wanted to get to the left.
Keith thought back to his home planet. Things were so much more different there.
When something like this happened, you would just do a ritual sacrifice.
Oh, not of anything living.
No, you would just go out to the yard, make a certain shape on the ground out of rocks, and then burn something you like coffee or some favorite garment. And then the spirits would understand and they'd fix everything.
So much more complicated here.
You had to go about stuff differently.
The first thing they did is buy a book about PR, and they studied it, and they studied historical figures like Edward Bernays.
How do we convince people of something? How do we use mass psychology? How can we trick people into accepting a truth that, well, may not be true, or adopting a habit that may be self-destructive?
They pored over the principles.
At the same time, Danny was going through the phone book furiously,
not just the phone book for their area, but worldwide. Heimlich, Klingler, Glimbler, Heimlich, Klingler. He pronounced the names out loud. Heimlich, there it is. He'd call the number. Is this Professor Heimlich who's interested in choking? No, said the voice. This is Marjorie Heimlich. I enjoy golf. Golf, you say, said Danny. I could use some pointers. What you doing Saturday morning? Probably golfing, said Mrs. Heimlich, and hung up. We're getting nowhere fast, said Danny. Are you sure this is the right way to go about it? I'm not sure, said Reuben. We might never contact Mr. Heimlich, or Dr. Heimlich, or Professor Heimlich, or Count Heimlich, or Field Marshal Heimlich, Keith interjected. Field Marshal Heimlich. So guess what? You're going to be Field Marshal Heimlich. And he pointed at Keith. What? Said Keith. You're the one who likes dressing up so much. And Reuben put his hands on his hips. You remember the cowboy incident? Do I ever, said Keith. So what's your idea? You, said Reuben, are going to dress up like Professor Heimlich from the old country. We're going to get you a goatee and a mustache and maybe even a monocle and then a walking stick. And then I was thinking to make it really realistic, we'd amputate your left leg and put a prosthetic leg there. I don't think that's necessary, said Keith, but the other stuff sounds right on. Okay, then, we'll get started, said Reuben. And he rummaged through the costume trunk that the band used when they were playing theme shows. Some of them had been able to go to other planets and see their future, and they really enjoyed bands that put some sort of performance or theatrical component into their stage act. And so the band decided to have costumes and things like that. Danny really enjoyed early Genesis, and he often wanted to paint his face up. Don't do it, said Keith. It's bad for your skin. Reuben started pulling things out of the trunk. A top hat. A monocle. Some fake goatee and mustache. A fake scar. White gloves. And a walking stick with a skull on it. Here is your Professor Field Marshal Heimlich costume, said Reuben. Perfect, said Keith. I will dress up into it, and then I'm going to go down to the Courier-Journal Times and tell them what's really up. You're missing one thing, said Danny. What, said Keith? Credentials. You got to have credentials. They're not going to take your word for it that you're Heimlich. You got to have proof, like a passport or a diploma. Yeah, that makes sense, said Reuben. Who do we know that can do forgery? Shirley Jones walked in the room. Well, let's just say that maybe your mama. Shirley, what do you mean? She laughed uproariously. I've got to tell you right now, I'm also from Arkafarb. I've just not been telling you because I didn't want to tell you. I've been a tourist here for a very long time, even developing an acting career. Because I'm a better actor than a lot of Earthlings, but absolutely no Arkafarbians. Well, you can do forgery, said Danny. Can I? Yes, said Keith, can you? Oh, and how? All right, said Danny. Well, get to work. And Shirley sat down at her desk. She pulled out a piece of paper, an X-Acto knife, and a pen, and she began to write in very, very small letters. She outlined the card with the X-Acto knife, and she began to make intricate details. She pulled a laser out of her pocket and ran it across the paper, and when she did, it transformed to an official-looking document. It instantly looked like a passport. That can't be Arkafarbian technology, is it? Thought Danny. Here's your credentials. Nobody'll doubt these, said Shirley. Shirley, this is amazing. This is a passport. But wait. Shirley pulled a pat of butter out of her pocket. It looked like she had taken it off the buffet at one of the many buffets that the Partridge family went to because they enjoyed buffets. She laid the pat of butter on the table, and she waved the same laser across it. And when she did, it transformed into a framed diploma from the University of Vienna in Chocology. Doctor of Chocology, Field Marshal Heimlich, here you go. This is perfect, said Keith. They will certainly believe me. I'm going to rush right now. Who can drive the bus? The smallest child, Chris, said, I'll do it. I'll drive the bus because I'm actually a fully grown adult and I'm just very tiny. And I came here because I was getting really, never mind, I'll drive. And so Chris strapped on a big block of wood onto the bottom of his right foot so he could reach the pedals and hopped into the driver's seat, closed the door, and they drove the bus to the Courier Journal Times office. Chapter 3. Danny sat on the front porch of the Partridge family house, smoking a long churchwarden pipe and thinking to himself, wow, what a long, strange TV show run that was. Penny for your thoughts, said Reuben Kincaid as he stepped up behind him. Reuben spit into the bushes and then pulled a hard candy out of his pocket, unwrapped it, put it in his mouth, sucked it until it was gone, and then pulled another one out, unwrapped it, thought better of it, put it back in, wrapped it up again, put it in his pocket, then got really angry, pulled it out, and he threw it straight up so it kind of went up onto the roof and stuck in the gutter. What you think's going to happen next, said Reuben. I don't know, said Danny. A lot of strange things have transpired the last few months. I thought this was going to be an ordinary research trip, and, well, it's turned into quite the ordeal. It really has. What are you going to think they'll do with Keith? No telling, said Danny. Now that they've got him, well, I doubt they'll let him go. No, you're right, said Reuben. I think they'll probably try to weaponize him or use him for something. Yeah, I thought about that. Like Superman. Yep, if you could turn Superman into a weapon, that'd be terrifying. How exactly, said Danny, are they going to use his gift for pop idol teen superstar sex god as a weapon? I don't know, said Keith. I'm going to break out of character for a minute. There is, I spilled something on the text. And it doesn't say Keith. It says Reuben Kincaid. And I saw the K. And it, so I'm all, if we could get, are we good?
Yeah, all right, keep going.
All right, I'm sorry, Tony. I had it almost in one take.
No problem. Just start at the beginning.
All right. Chapter 1. Keith.
No. Just start at the beginning of the last paragraph.
All right. Sorry. From where Reuben throws the candy up in the thing, and they're talking about what they're going to do with Keith if he had been turned into a weapon, something like that. Danny smelled his finger. It still smelled like pipe tobacco. He smelled his middle finger. It smelled like lemon. Why is there a lemon one there? He smelled his ring finger. It smelled like pipe tobacco again. What happened? Did I flip off a lemon while I was smoking a pipe? We laughed out loud. We? Where's that voice coming from, said Danny. It's us, the school officials. We've been listening to you the whole time. Yeah? Well, maybe you can chime in. What are we going to do about Keith? Now that they got Keith? Now that they know his secret? Now that they've turned him into the King of Earth, they're calling him? What are we supposed to do? I mean, we have messed up so bad, I feel like we can't even come home. No, said the voice in Danny's ear. You can't come home. You've been banished.
Banished? I'm 12.
I'm sorry, said the voice. But once something like that happens, you're liable to contaminate this planet.
Contaminate my own planet, said Danny. With outdated knowledge?
Here, let me talk to them, said Reuben.
Oh,
no, don't, Reuben, you don't have to get right up in the ear. Use your own headpiece. Okay. Hey, school officials, Reuben Kincaid here. Why, that's so harsh. I don't mind staying here because I'm older and I've already sort of established, and I didn't plan to go back to Arkafar. But we have children here, and they are not really responsible for it. It's more entirely on Keith Partridge. There was no response. I think they're thinking, said Reuben Kincaid. I hope they come up with a solution. No, said the voice. You're still all banished. We're sorry. We don't mean to be difficult about this, but it's just a violation of the rules in the extreme. All right. So, I'm wondering something. Yes? How many more banished students are there here? The voice abruptly hung up. Danny, I have an idea. I think I'm on to something.
What is it?
Remember when you said you thought maybe we're all students here?
Yeah.
I think we are. And I think everybody's been banished.
What do you mean?
I believe that Arkafarb was taken over by another species doing just what we're doing here and tricked us into self-exiling on another planet.
You got to be kidding.
Yep. I think that's what happened. I think that they all knew we would come here, fail, because it's a setup, and then we're stuck. And we can't go back to Arkafarb.
Danny thought about it. Boy, that makes a lot of sense.
So there is a planet we can never go back to that we were exiled from on purpose by a superior race, and now we're here thinking that we're dominating another inferior species, but actually we're just all the same species that's been, you know, cast out.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So we're a sort of penal colony?
Exactly.
We're a penal colony. That's why people are sort of obsessed with all things penal, basically.
Yes,
responded Reuben. I think I know what you mean. You know what I mean. Oh, that means that we have no choice but to spring Keith. Yep, we've got to spring Keith. He will lead us. He'll lead all of the exiled Arkafarbians. And they laughed together. The end. Thank you for listening to It's Hard to Be a Partridge by Hardy White. And the second book of the series, Partridge Messiah, comes out next year. And it's going to be great. I'm working on it now. This is the author, Hardy White. And I'm so glad you were joining me today. I want you to have a wonderful week. Just like I want to dedicate this show to my cat. Just passed away hours ago. And she was old and very sick, had become sick. And it's a blessing that she has gone on. But I'd like to thank her for being a wonderful companion and good friend all these years, and dedicate this show to her because she just loved the Strugatsky brothers. All right, my friends, you are listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Freeform Radio, thank you so much. And you should listen to Mahogany next. Love you, bye.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
Second half, we gonna show off tomorrow, man. turn up in the monitors a little bit.
Put a
little
smile on my face. Woke out of bed, took a shower, dressed, cleaned up my place, made me some bread. Through, we gon' have to.